The state of the state. Did the governor have the wrong focus? The Daniels budget. Can schools survive on it? Indiana congressmen react to the Arizona shooting. Melina Kennedy for mayor. Beer at the state fair. What the governor says about Illinois and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 14, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Governor Mitch Daniels delivered his seventh State of the State address to the General Assembly in a statewide television audience. Daniels devoted most of the speech to one topic, education reform. Democrats accused him of ignoring the jobs issue, but the governor said education can influence whether businesses choose to expand in Indiana. He said improving schools starts with teacher quality.
Our best teachers should be paid more, much more, and ineffective teachers should be helped to improve or asked to move.
Did the governor have the right focus in his State of the State address? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, if Mitch Daniels had focused on jobs, would Democrats find a reason to criticize that?
Cute question. The fact of the matter is when Mitch Daniels ran, his platform was all about the wealth in Indiana. Basically, we were making at the time 91 cents on every dollar that was being made in all the rest of the country. Now we're down to 86 cents on the dollar on his watch. And our unemployment is higher than the national average. And we're fifth in the number of bankruptcies in the country per capita, fifth for the second year in a row, and the foreclosure rate hasn't even peaked here. So the economy is not good, but you have to give him credit for a certain amount of chutzpah. He stands up there and he announces jobs, which may or may not occur based on some investigative journalism that's gone on. It may be paper only. But then he says, but if we're going to have a better economy, it's all on the national government to do it. So it's an interesting bait and switch. I think education is an important topic. I think education reform is an important topic. Yeah. And I'd like to see him invest in early childhood education if he was serious about the matter.
It was a rosy portrayal, right?
I guess the answer to your question is yes, they would have found something else.
Well, I knew that when I asked it.
What did I say? It's not true.
It was, about everything.
Oh,
well,
no.
Other than that.
Oh, no.
He talked about jobs in the opening part of the speech. He talked about the success they've had in bringing jobs to Indiana, but he did concentrate on education, which everybody in Indiana knew that was going to be the focus of this speech before he ever gave it. And everybody I talked to in the state, I thought he gave a great speech, and I think it's been well received around Indiana. And people are tired of waiting. They want quality, and that's what he's going to bring them with this education reform plan.
Was it a good speech?
I think it was a good speech in terms of what he wanted to accomplish. He wanted to, he sees this as a potential legacy issue, the finally having an opportunity after one and a half terms to have a significant impact in education, an area where, because of the economy and other issues, he has not necessarily gone heavily into in the past. So I think he wanted to state his case in that regard, and I think he had an opportunity to do that and do it fairly effectively.
There is this ongoing discussion of whether or not he's going to run for president. A lot of people were looking for indications in that speech to try to figure out if he was leaning one way or another. There was nothing there.
Not if you were looking for presidential aspirations. I don't think so. He focused on Indiana. He focused on, and he gave short shrift to the things that I think would have made him attractive in the national eye, and that is more about jobs and more about what's happened in Indiana. And the tax climate that's here as well, because we're the 10th best tax climate in the country. So I don't think that he gave anybody who's looking for excuses or whether or not he's going to run any ammunition or any clues.
All right, let's go to the follow-up to the State of the State. Governor Mitch Daniels proposed a spending freeze in state government this week. Although colleges and universities will get a 3% cut under the governor's budget proposal, and Medicaid recipients will no longer be eligible for dental coverage or hearing aids, among other things, the cuts were part of a proposal presented to the State Budget Committee. The proposal meets the guidelines laid out in the State of the State address: no tax hikes and no school cuts, but there are no school increases either. The public schools, who saw a 3% cut last year, will continue at that spending level through this year and the next two.
We've made a lot of tough decisions. I think if we can continue to hold the line, we can come out in a very competitive position, in a position that will be an envy a lot of other states.
Can schools survive with a spending freeze?
Well, it's going to be very difficult because, again, our costs don't go down.
I think what we see today is a remarkable effort, quite frankly, by an administration that has helped us get through tough times.
Mike McDaniel, will that budget proposal see significant changes?
I think it's going to be pretty close to what you saw there. I think you're going to see at least the basics the same, meaning if people want to make changes, he doesn't mind that as long as they're structurally with the same result.
Well, what he has said, if spend a
no
dollar,
new taxes,
cut a dollar.
No new taxes. Right. It's got to be structurally sound to the fiscal year 2013, which this proposal gets you there. At least reserves that will protect taxpayers, and no gimmicks such as, you know, delaying payments to schools or pension raids or any of that kind of stuff. So as long as they meet those criteria, I don't think he cares where they go with it, as long as the education reform is addressed and the other things that he's talking about.
With the amount of money there, there's just not a lot that can be done.
No, I mean, by the governor's own definition, the state's bankrupt. And so, you know, these decisions are going to get increasingly difficult to make. And it's difficult to talk about the educational climate being an engine of growth for jobs here when you're cutting, as we're cutting, education spending for higher education. And when you're flatlining K through 12, you're actually cutting what resources are available. Now,
well, it's an interesting circumstance because they had a small increase, a 1% increase, but then in the appropriation, but then they cut the distribution by 3, and it's staying there. So so over time, it is a cut.
It is a cut. And the difference, of course, is in higher education, they can raise their own taxes by increasing tuition, and we're going to see that, which is going to make it, again, more difficult for working class people to afford higher education. And these are tough decisions to make. And if they're being made because we're bankrupt, I understand that. I just hope that we're not doing it to protect a surplus at the expense of people who need hearing aids and dentures and things like that, because I think that's a hard way to go.
The fact of the matter is, in this budget proposal, the end surplus is 5% of the state budget, which is under recommendations.
It's under recommendations.
It's only 3 weeks of state budget.
Still three-quarters of $1 billion.
Right. One source of new revenue in this, it's taking money from the Public Deposit Insurance Fund, which is money banks have paid in. The governor wants to use $200 million to help out the bottom line. The banks say that it's their money. There's going to be a fight over that.
That is going to be an area where there is a severe fight over that, because that is the bank's money. That's money that's essentially been assessed to banks and put into escrow to protect depositors. And the argument that the administration is making is that that's a double layer of protection, because federal protection takes care of those things. So the banks are saying they should get that money back. It should be redistributed to them if they eliminate the fund. The administration's saying, no, that's public money. It should come into the public's general fund. That's where the fight's going to happen, and it's going to be a good one.
The budget proposal ignores what's going on with the unemployment insurance fund, and if that problem's not solved, I understand, an interest payment due in September of $60 million. So you think they get that solved and keep it outside the budget?
That's a good question. The meter is running, as you point out, Jim. $60 million will be due on $2 billion debt. As you'll recall, at the end of last session, there was this hope on both sides of the aisle that maybe if we wait long enough, the problem is so pervasive and so many states are dealing with this that the federal government will have to bail us out, which in a bit was somewhat ironic because it was coming from a lot of people who were deficit hawks and right. Anti-federal government aid in other contexts. So it will be very interesting to see how this is resolved. As far as the budget itself, I think that it will be largely enacted as certainly it'll adhere to the guidelines that the governor spelled out. But I think that you saw some sense on the Medicaid Medicaid reductions, for instance, for the optional payments for things such as hearing aids and dentures. It seemed that you had people, again, on both sides of the aisle. Look at the people who will be looking at this on House Ways and Means. You had former chairman of House Ways and Means, Bill Crawford, saying, what do you want people to do? Well, you know, gum their food, which is pretty graphic and pretty telling where he feels. But then you had Jeff Espick, who, of course, has taken over the chair, seat as chairman of that committee, saying, you know, that hands out a lot of pain for not much gain. It's basically a $20 million savings. Right. And do you really want to have people going without dentures and being unable to hear in that situation?
And children, too. It takes away pediatric dental care for children in Medicaid, too.
But there's not going to be any more revenue because Democrats aren't going to propose a tax increase.
No, they're not going to propose a tax increase. There will be, unemployment compensation is going to mean employers are going to be paying more in taxes on that. That's clear.
Premiums, they call them.
They're taxes on employers, and we're going to be paying a lot more as a result of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough 2 years. I mean, the effects of the recession,
sure
the bottom line is here, the effects of the recession are going to last through 2013
sure
and maybe longer in Indiana.
It's going to be a very tough 2 years. But the thing that's important to remember here is the reason that we are in better shape fiscally than most states in this country is because the governor's been dealing with this every step of the way as he's gone. They've cut government to the bone, 25% to most state agencies. And so they have been doing this every step of the way, and that's why
there's no place left to cut.
That's why, that's right, and that's why you're in a situation now where you can get through this without a tax increase, like 40 other states have done. And if you want to do these other things, raise taxes,
John.
Well, I think one thing that's missing that's going to be important this time too is the federal funds that help prop up the budget and create the situation where the governor could be aggressive with his cutting on the budget. Allowed them to still have a balanced budget through the end of this current fiscal year. So that's gone. That makes it that much more difficult.
That's right. And if the governor were really doing the job on unemployment and we had more people working, we'd have more income coming in. We are ahead of the national average on unemployment, Michael. Sorry.
Look, they've created more jobs here than any other state.
We're ahead of every state in the Midwest in the terms of the number of bankruptcies per capita. So something is wrong in Indiana.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, would you be willing to pay higher taxes if it meant more money for schools? Your choices are yes or no. Last week's question was, will bipartisan cooperation be a hallmark in the Indiana House of Representatives this year? 71% said yes. 29% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. At least two Indiana congressmen are arguing against tighter security at congressional events despite the shooting of Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords this week. Both longtime Congressman Mike Pence and newly elected Congressman Todd Rokita say congressmen need to interact with voters on a personal basis.
Having a long-standing practice of town hall meetings across this 6th congressional district, let me say, we are determined to continue our public schedule without interruption.
Under the Constitution, we are the body that is supposed to be closest to the people, and I never want to get away from that.
John Katzenberger, will some members of Congress change the way they deal with the public?
I'm sure they will. I mean, the episode last Saturday was a terrible tragedy, and I'm sure that it's caught a lot of people and made them rethink what they do. You know, those kinds of meetings happen all over the country on Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings, and people probably didn't give them a second thought, but now they are. I think that Congressman Rokita and Congressman Pence have got a good idea, because if they go into a bunker mentality, it just continues to separate government from the people, and that's not healthy at all. And hopefully we'll find a way to make sure that these are secure, take care of that, but also allow them to interact with their constituents.
Theirs is not a universal response. We saw that Andre Carson actually had some increased security last weekend because he's apparently faced some serious threats that obviously they won't talk about. Marlon Stutzman has talked about looking at security measures.
Sure, when you have a tragedy such as this, it human nature, I mean, you're going to be, there will be a heightened concern. I think you had the House Sergeant at Arms within hours of the shooting basically having a conference call for staff members and members of the House from both parties outlining some steps that could be taken perhaps in conjunction with local law enforcement to heighten protection. But the problem The reason I don't think we'd see any significant change in the way people, members of Congress, interact with their constituents is one of optics and perception here. It is the people's house. There is a reluctance, I think, to be seen as engaging in the kind of bunker mentality that John alluded to. And that's why, for instance, Dan Burton, Indiana Congressman Dan Burton, who for years, long before this tragedy in Arizona, has suggested putting up sort of a bulletproof glass shell around the House chamber. That's why I think that proposal, for instance, wouldn't get any more traction now necessarily than it has before, because the imagery of having basically a fishbowl or an aquarium around separating members of the House from the people who put them there and the people who pay their salaries is problematic.
Yeah. Will congressmen change the way they deal with each other? There's been a lot of talk this week about the vitriolic nature of modern politics, and there's also a lot of talk about the fact that this was one deranged young man who acted on his own. Regardless of all that, will people be more civil as a result?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think that people will make an effort to do that. Usually a tragedy like this, you know, generates that kind of response. As far as the actual protection goes, I think you will see more protection of these members at events. We may not notice it,
maybe,
but
not
it'll
obvious.
Be there.
Yeah.
And I think that's up to the individual member, and so be it. If Andre Carson feels like he needs that kind of protection, then he ought to have it, and it should be on a case-by-case basis. So, yeah, I hope the dialogue tones down. I think everybody does. But there's been no reference yet to specifics that this young man had anything to do with that. I think it was more effect of his mental state than anything else. But it's going to be interesting to see how this goes forward.
It seemed to be personal.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that he has a specific or had a specific political agenda. But when the rhetoric is all that government is the enemy, then it seems to me that anybody, whether they're Republican or Democrat, who's out there as a representative of government could be a target. I think that kind of discussion is not helpful, and I would hope we'd have that cease to occur. And in terms of the protection, I think Mike's right on that. If there's, particularly if there have been threats, specific threats, I think that most members of Congress and their staffs will take these more seriously now, and they'll have them investigated, and they should. And if protection is warranted, they ought to get it.
Democrat Melina Kennedy officially kicked off her campaign to be the next mayor of Indianapolis this week. The former deputy mayor and candidate for prosecutor made the announcement in front of a downtown business that's not seen here. This is when she initially filed. She is talking about job creation efforts in Indianapolis. Kennedy may still face Ron Gibson, a former member of the city county council, in a primary. Republican Mayor Greg Ballard announced last month he'll seek re-election in November. John Schwanes, would a contested primary be good or bad for Melina Kennedy?
Oh, I don't think it really matters. I don't see it as necessarily much of a contest. I mean, you look at the war chest that these candidates have accumulated, and you have her potential primary opponent with, what, $12,000 at this point. You have her report saying she has about $940,000, not as much as Greg Ballard has with $1.4 million, but still. If you look, if you line those three stacks of money up, which
sure.
one is not like the other, it's pretty clear.
But she could use some name ID. she could use maybe some road testing. That's what I'm saying.
You're suggesting a primary might be good?
Against a guy with $12,000, maybe?
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually, except if it becomes a very vitriolic. I mean, you don't need a lot of money in a countywide election to turn it into a negative mudslinging affair. And if that occurs, then it damages her. But if it's a spirited campaign where it helps raise her profile through attention, then that probably is good for her.
Or does Ron Gibson have a chance?
No. I'd be surprised if he went to the post. I don't think she's going to have a contested primary.
Would it be good for her to?
You can have a campaign without having a primary opponent. She can introduce herself to the voters. She can take advantage of the cost of ads adjacent to a primary. She doesn't need to have an opponent to do that.
You see no upside.
I don't see any upside, nor do I frankly see any downside, because I don't think he's going to have the kind of resources to make it a campaign at all.
This race, according to the Washington Post website today, is among the top 10 in the country to watch in 2011. You buy that?
Yeah, probably. I mean, clearly the demographics of this county say it's a Democrat county, but the incumbent's got a 58% approval rating, the Republican incumbent. People think he's honest and hardworking, and he's proven himself on jobs, which is the number one thing she's going after him on, which is interesting to me. We found out today that in the 3 years she was the deputy mayor in charge of jobs, they created less jobs than Indianapolis did in all of 2010. And so if that's going to be her focus, she better do her homework on that because that's not going
to
work.
Although the issues, I'm not sure what issues really she would have to choose from. The ones she has chosen, jobs and the economy,
jobs,
you're right.
What she campaigned on in her announcement.
Public safety is going to be a big issue.
Well, the jobs issue, to Mike's point, I mean, it's a good one because Newsweek, I think, had a piece a couple weeks ago looking at six cities. And the headline was pretty telling, I think, was something like, what recession? And Indiana was, Indianapolis was cited as one of the municipalities that have done quite well. So that's a tough row to hoe. And then the other one that's interesting, public safety, Jim, as you point out, is that talk about, you know, everything being new again or not being new again in this case, because that's exactly the issue that one of the issues, primary issues, that Greg Ballard ran on back when he took the office in the first place.
All right. Alcohol could soon be coming to the Indiana State Fair. Republican State Representative Bob Cherry has introduced a bill that would allow breweries and wineries from Indiana to sell their products during the fair's 17-day run.
It would open it up with a priority of Indiana ale and Indiana wine.
Only.
But it's a priority. Now, they can sell other products, but it will put a priority during the 17 days.
Our intent is to promote agriculture. And we will prominently feature the Indiana beers and wines.
Andy Klotz of the State Fair there, Mike McDaniel. Will that face opposition?
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of spirited discussion about this proposal, but it's a good one, actually. I kiddingly say this may launch the Bob Cherry for Governor campaign. what they're talking about doing is promoting Indiana beer and Indiana wine, products that are produced here, in a very limited area on the fairgrounds. Indiana's probably one of only, I think there's something like 10 states now that doesn't have alcohol in one form or another at their fair. So, and they sell it there
every
all the
day,
rest of the year.
Every day of the year, except
for
when the fair's in town.
When the fair's going on.
Yeah.
So, I think it's always going to be a spirited discussion about something like this. But Bob Cherry's on the right idea to promote Indiana wine and Indiana beer.
There are some people concerned about drunks at the fair.
There are.
You see that happening?
You know, if somebody wants to go in that kind of a crowd in 95-degree weather to get drunk, I guess somebody can do it. But I don't really see that as a big problem. I think it's a good idea. We have a lot of microbreweries in this state, and I think we ought to be promoting them.
You know, the buzz you'd get from that one homebrewed beer is probably not anything close to the deep-fried Snicker bar rolled in powdered sugar.
But if you do both, then you're in
then
trouble.
We've had year of the tomato, we've had year of the tree. Let's have year of the beer, and let's start
spoken like
now.
A connoisseur.
You betcha. A fine Indiana beer.
Finally. Illinois raised taxes this week, and Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels couldn't resist weighing in. In an interview on a Chicago radio station, he called it entertaining. Said Daniels, it's like living next door to The Simpsons. You know, the dysfunctional family down the block. And Delaney, what do those remarks tell you?
I don't think he's thinking about running for president. There are more electoral votes in Illinois than there are in Indiana. Yeah, they raised taxes, and it's a bad time to do it. On the other hand, they're facing what we've been facing, which is the unfunded pension liability for state and teachers. They've been borrowing for years to pay for that. And we're not quite there yet either. To the extent that the governor forces senior teachers to retire, that liability is getting bigger and bigger out there.
Illinois increased corporate taxes and income taxes. The Economic Development Corporation in Indiana has already got people knocking on doors in the Chicago area. And the governor put in his budget proposal that's maybe a source of new revenue is jobs from Illinois.
And Wisconsin's realistic? Already promoting tourism there as a result and new business there. I mean, they raised corporate income tax to, 46%, personal income 67%. I mean, that's just unbelievable in this day and age, especially when people are hurting like they are. So, you know, it's entertaining, and the governor knows how to strike when the iron's hot.
It's important to remember, though, that while it went from 3% to 5%, Indiana's effective average tax rate on the income tax is 4.8% when you count cutting option income tax.
We should just point out, if you want to hear,
it's not that big a deal.
It's an advantage, but it's not that huge.
If you want to hear Mitch Daniels talk more about capitalizing on it, you can watch Indiana Lawmakers on many of these same public television and radio stations and television stations.
There's a fine for that.
Okay,
that's right. We're going to go out and have some fine Indiana beer on the job.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.